from a photographer's standpoint, how did the process start for you as to attempt photographing these people, and how did it change as you did it?
When I first started working on this, I think my first thought was, you know, how am I going to photograph this? Because by and large, all this happened, you know, half a century ago. That was a huge problem. And I started making portraits of these men. And I began, you know, looking at them, I began noticing that they all had this kind of same, I don't want to say hollow, but I think that's the right word, like the same hollow look in their eyes, like there was something missing, like because of it, well, at least in part, and because of what they experienced when they were at this school.
These portraits, it should be said, are haunting. And the way we've got the page laid out at this point, you know, you look at it and you see sort of this same look that he's talking about in each of their eyes.
What about you, Ben? How did you approach talking to attempt to talk about some really painful, sensitive information?
You know, it was a hard thing. I mean, you have a tendency to sympathize with these guys. Many of them, I was, you know, the first newspaper reporter they had ever met, and I was the second or third person that they had ever shared these stories with. I mean, by and large, these guys got out of the school at the age of 13 or 14, 15, and never spoke of this again, you know, for 50 years in some cases. So when they started coming forward, they sort of felt empowered in this group, I think. And as it went on, I realized that I also had to scrutinize what these guys were saying. A lot of them seemed to be making assumptions about old memories, and that's a dangerous territory. I mean, I can't remember what I had, you know, for breakfast a week ago. And we're talking about 50 years. It was, you know, I practiced a lot of patience, went back to them a lot. It should also be said that we're working with another colleague, Waveney Ann Moore, who's been really fantastic. We're trying to tabulate the number of hours we've spent just doing interviews with the men who were abused at the school. It's easily, you know, over 100 hours. So if you can imagine 100 hours of interviews with these guys, you know, and then sort of trying to figure out which of the stories feel most honest.
What about some of the wives that you interviewed?
Most of the wives tended not to believe their husbands. Not that they were lying, but they didn't believe that their husbands had been abused as badly. I think as the stories started to come out and as the wives, you know, read other accounts that were similar to what they had heard from their husbands, it's like things clicked. When these stories came out, they clicked for the wives and the children of these men. Oh, that's why you don't give hugs.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's hard for you to say, I love you. That's why the main character in the story is a guy named Bill Haynes, and Bill's wife said, you know what, he's always been defensive, very quick to blame me. And she said, you know, the other day I was complaining about how the mailman put the mail in the mailbox. And Bill said, well, I'm sure you're going to figure out some way to pin that on me. And she said, this is just a common thing for him. And Bill says, you know, and now that makes sense. You know, you had to watch your back.
The four main guys that have been accused of beating, were any of them still alive?
Two are still alive. One is named in the lawsuit. The other is not at this point. The gentleman who's named in the lawsuit would not talk to us. We've interviewed a member of his family who knows him pretty well, and his attorney. But he is an elderly man. He's 84. His family contends that he didn't have the capacity to commit these types of crimes, and have suggested that the White House boys are exaggerating. But we tried every way we knew to confront him face to face, including sitting outside of his house for a while.
What about the other gentleman that isn't named in the lawsuit? Did you speak to him?
We did, and he was pretty open and forthcoming. He was a superintendent at the school for about 20 years and contends that he did not abuse any kids. He admits that he spanked some kids. He contends that he stayed within the guidelines. He administered no more than, you know, 10 swats. He thinks that there is some exaggeration from the victims. At the same time, he admits that there's a pretty good chance that some of the people on staff would have taken corporal punishment to the extreme.
Do you think that this process has been painful or therapeutic for these men?
That's a mixed bag. Yeah, some of them have felt like this is a good thing, and they're out. They're seeking retribution. They want these guys to pay. Other guys have sort of regretted getting involved. You know, this has brought up a lot of bad memories, and they thought at first, "I'll help. I'll lend my voice to this chorus of complainants." And this has brought back their nightmares, and several expressed that they wished they had kept it buried.
You know, even for the men that are still, you know, on board with this suit, even they're, you know, second guessing. Is bringing all this back up out of the recesses of my mind, you know, worth it? You know, I definitely think it's a mixed bag. I don't think it's done.
No, it's we're now
it's something we're going to keep following.
Yeah, this story deals with the history of the school, and it runs from, you know, 1903, when children, some as young as 5 years old, are found in shackles, until 2007, when a kid named Justin Caldwell gets beaten up by a guard, and the guard and the superintendent at the school get fired. So, you know, this is...
The video is on YouTube of that.
Yeah. This is almost 109 years of child abuse, state-sanctioned child abuse. So we're driven now by the question of what's going on at the school today.